Words have power, but when arranged with deliberate skill, they transcend mere communication to become instruments of persuasion that can change hearts, minds, and history itself. Classical rhetoric, the ancient art of effective speaking and writing, isn't some dusty academic relic. It's the hidden architecture behind history's most memorable utterances, from Churchill's wartime speeches to Shakespeare's immortal lines, from Lincoln's Gettysburg Address to Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. These masters weren't accidentally eloquent. They were applying techniques first identified in ancient Greece and Rome that continue to shape our most powerful language today. While formal rhetoric has largely disappeared from modern education, its patterns remain embedded in our cultural DNA. Barack Obama's speechwriter studied these techniques. So did Steve Jobs when crafting his legendary product launches. Even Taylor Swift's most memorable lyrics often employ classical devices like anaphora and chiasms. In a world drowning in communication, yet starving for persuasion, understanding these patterns isn't just intellectually fascinating, it's practically essential for anyone who wants their words to matter. Repetition is rhetoric's most fundamental principle. Using words or phrases multiple times to create emphasis, rhythm, or emotional impact. Conrad Kurtz whispering, the horror, achieves what a single utterance couldn't. Churchill's, we shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, transformed military strategy into an unforgettable rallying cry. Repeating words consecutively creates unmistakable emphasis. Shakespeare's reputation, reputation, reputation in Othello, and Thoreau's simplicity, simplicity, simplicity demonstrate how triple repetition pounds the table verbally. Words repeated with others between them become thematic elements that linger, as in Burke's declaration about the worst revenue and the worst army in the world. Repetition can even mimic physical movement. Melville's daub, 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 load, load, load makes words perform the actions they describe. Biblical turn ye creates an almost physical push toward action, techniques that make language physically evocative rather than merely descriptive. Where repetition occurs matters as much as what is repeated. Anaphora, repeating words at the beginning of successive clauses, creates a hammering effect that ensures memorability, as in Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. When the subject remains constant while verbs change, anaphora creates a sense of inexorability. We shall seek no terms, we shall tolerate no parley. When both subject and verb remain constant, emphasis falls on the actor and action. Epistrophe, repetition at the end of phrases, builds more subtly, as in Lincoln's government of the people, by the people, for the people. The most powerful effects often come from establishing a pattern and then strategically abandoning it, creating apparent improvisation within structure. Simplos combines repetition at both beginning and end while changing only the middle. We do not need a censorship of the press, we have a censorship by the press. These minimal changes highlight contrasts for maximum impact. Anadadiplosis connects ideas by repeating the ending of one clause at the beginning of the next, ABB pattern, as in Franklin's, for want of a nail the shoe was lost, for want of a shoe the horse was lost. This naturally illustrates causal progressions. Isochalon uses successive phrases of similar length and parallel structure, as in Kennedy's pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship. When extended to three elements, trichalon, it creates a satisfying completeness. Rhetoric's power often emerges from unexpected word arrangements. Chiasmus creates an AB pattern by repeating words in reverse order, as in Kennedy's ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. This structure forms a seemingly irrefutable closed loop. Chiasmus effectively challenges surface impressions. Chesterton notes, men need not trouble to alter conditions. Conditions will so soon alter men. While Emerson asks about libraries, the real question is what it will do with you. Anastrophe, placing words in unexpected order, creates both surprise and rhythm. King Richard's, "My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine," demonstrates this effect. Placing adjectives after nouns elevates language, as in Burke's, "Reasoning weak, rotten, and sophistical." These inversions transform how ideas are received. Periodic sentences unfold meaning gradually, building suspense until the final clarifying words, controlling emphasis and creating a formal tone for significant pronouncements. The presence or absence of conjunctions dramatically affects language flow. Polysyndeton, the repeated use of conjunctions, creates rhythm, regulates pace, and emphasizes items in a series. When Dickens writes, "He went to church, and walked about the streets, and watched the people hurrying to and fro, and patted children on the head," the repeated "and" generates momentum that makes the narrative feel energetic and continuous. Conversely, asyndeton, omitting conjunctions, creates emphasis through compression. When Neil Kinnock declared, "The House of Lords must go, not be reformed, not be replaced, not be reborn in some nominated life-after-death patronage paradise, just closed down, abolished, finished," the absence of conjunctions gives each phrase independent force while suggesting acceleration. With verbs, asyndeton creates the impression of actions building toward a crescendo of meaning, as in Burke's description of the English Constitution that pervades, feeds, unites, invigorates, vivifies, where each verb adds a new dimension. Sometimes the most powerful rhetoric comes from what's deliberately left out. Ellipsis, the omission of expected words, engages the audience by requiring them to mentally fill in the gaps. When paired with parallel structure, it creates rhythm while maintaining brevity, as in Emerson's, "The priest becomes a form, the attorney a statute book, the mechanic a machine, the sailor a rope of a ship." Aposiopesis occurs when a speaker breaks off mid-sentence, creating suspense or suggesting overwhelming emotion. King Lear threatens, "I will do such things, what they are, yet I know not." While Antony pauses, "My heart is in the coffin there with Caesar, and I must pause till it come back to me." Rhetorical questions imply their own answers rather than calling for replies. They engage audiences, express passion, and shift responsibility to listeners. While statements require evidence, rhetorical questions challenge listeners to disprove the implied claim. As Lincoln demonstrates, "Did we brave all then to falter now?" Classical rhetoric isn't about decorative language flourishes. It's about structuring communication for maximum impact. These techniques have shaped history's most powerful messages, from Lincoln's "Government of the People" to King's "I Have a Dream," providing timeless principles that transcend temporary trends. In our age of abbreviated communication and diminished attention spans, classical techniques offer sophisticated tools that command attention through structure, rhythm, and artful arrangement. The greatest communicators integrate these devices so seamlessly that technique becomes invisible. Churchill's wartime speeches exemplify how rhetorical mastery transforms ordinary statements into unforgettable declarations that move hearts, change minds, and alter history. By studying these patterns, we gain practical tools for making our own words matter. The art of rhetoric reminds us that how we say something can be just as important as what we say, sometimes even more so.